thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally here. My boy Will T. Ray is out, you know, because Ray's having some family stuff. Not a negative way.
It's a celebration.
Celebration
today.
Yeah, exactly. Celebrating. I want to give them Ray's business. But he's celebrating. So, you know, Ray's out. But yeah, you listen to the Urban Sports Scene. Myself, Wally, Will T. What's good, Will?
Nothing much, man. A little tired, but you know, I'm going to make it through.
She was a soldier. Who the Bama who said I'm a soldier? Who said that?
Master P.
No. Kellen Winslow Jr.
Oh.
You remember we went on that tirade? I'm a soldier. Ah! I wanted to draft that dude. Well, you know, I wanted to watch the Redskins draft that dude back in the day. But you know, that year they got Sean Taylor instead. A friend of mine always reminds me about that.
Yeah. I mean, so rest in peace to Sean Taylor. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately that it probably worked out
for the
best, considering you take into consideration both of their careers.
Of course, yeah. And then obviously, what he meant for this organization to this day. And it was a short career.
Short life.
Yeah, that's real. Short life. No, I'm going to give folks a little tease, man. Big things happening next week. Supposed to. You know, if everything plays out right, we'll have free agent cornerback Bashaud Breeland on the show. He's got a lot to say. Give him the platform to say he wants to say. Again, that's a guy who played for the Washington Redskins last season. And was drafted by the Washington Redskins as well. Will should be on the show next week, Tuesday, 8 o'clock. So make sure you check it out. But we'll see how we usually do things.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
All right, here are our topics. The Washington Wizards, possible playoff opponents. We'll talk about that. At 8:20, we'll have Washington Capitals insider Ed Frankovic to talk about the Washington Capitals first round Stanley Cup playoff matchup against the Columbus Blue Jackets. At 8:30, we'll talk about what Josh Norman had to say about Redskins quarterback Alex Smith. At 8:40, we'll discuss the Nationals and are they still the favorites in the NL East? Finally, at 8:50, we'll talk about Robert Griffin III signing with the Baltimore Ravens.
I don't think there's much to talk about on that one, but
you know what? You'd be surprised, honestly. You would be surprised.
I mean,
I agree with you. He's a backup, but you would be surprised what people feel about that guy.
I understand people have an opinion, and they have a right to have an opinion because they're, you know, sports fans with people, and then sports fans second. But I really don't think discussing him is newsworthy, but we'll talk about it.
Okay. All right. So right now the Washington Wizards are have the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference. If the playoffs started today, they would be playing the Toronto Raptors. If they played the Raptors, would you like their chances?
Nope.
All right. Tell me why.
Well, depending on how Dwayne Casey deploys his bench,
mm-hmm.
Toronto is a much deeper team. They go with that second unit. They have offensive playmakers, and they also have defensive stoppers on that second play. Also, John Wall came out today and said himself, you know, these last two regular season games, we have to play them like the playoffs because where every possession counts. And he stated that we take possessions off during the regular season.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just this easy for this team, for this Wizards team, to turn it on and turn it off, to be able to turn on the switch to play hard every possession and make every possession count comes to playoffs. And against Toronto, a team that I believe is better than the Wizards, they would need to do that.
One, you know, I've said this before in prior shows. When it comes to Toronto Raptors, you got to show me. It's a show me thing. Regular season is a cool thing. They played great in the regular season. Their bench has been good. I think you mentioned that last couple shows ago. Their bench has been highly improved compared to other years. But we all know in the postseason, regardless of bench and how good your bench is, we know that it's usually an 8-man rotation. Regardless of the fact, teams don't typically go 10 deep in the postseason because of. The importance of a game or a swing game or whatnot.
No, it's not the importance of the game. It's because the coach is coach scared.
Scared. Oh, yeah, agreed. But I did, right? But that's the norm, though, right? It's you shorten your bench to an eight-man bench.
It's the norm
bench for
everyone except for Steve Kerr.
It's true. That's true. Except for Golden State. But for most of the NBA, you go to 8-man rotation. And in the playoffs, regardless of what you've done in the regular season, players get tight. It happens in the playoffs. And you rely on your guns in the playoffs, your stars. Your role players will not lead the way. So you need guys like, say, a Kyle Lowry to step up. And from the track record, because all we can go off is track records. In the postseason, when he's playing against highly talented point guards, he tends to come out small.
I'll give you that. But I think that there's better depth, especially at the backup point guard position with Van Fleet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even though he's only in his second year, I believe. But there's a certain level of tenacity and consistency that Van Fleet plays with,
mm-hmm.
which I think would help to balance any loss of production that you may get from Kyle Lowry.
But do you think, my answer to that is, do you think that Casey has the heart and the gumption in the postseason to go to Van, if that's going on with Lowry, what we've seen in the past, do you think he has the gumption to say, you know what, Kyle, you're going to sit on the bench, Van Fleet going to take the show?
I mean, yes, I do. For one, and for two, this Toronto team plays a lot different than they have
in previous years,
where previous years they would, if they couldn't get to the bucket or if they couldn't get DeMar DeRozan to get that mid-range jumper, the offense would be stuck. Whereas mm-hmm. now the offense is a lot more open, it's free-flowing, and they're taking a lot more three-pointers.
They are taking a lot of threes. But even the regular season, we're going off regular season for this team, right, this Raptors team. I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, didn't the Wizards split with the Raptors this season without and not even having John Wall on the roster?
I don't know.
I know they beat them here without John Wall. I think they have a split. It's a split. And this is without John Wall. So you're going to have confidence going to a series with John Wall and going against that team. I'm just saying, like, Toronto, to me, I think Cleveland beats the Wizards regardless. Like, I think that's the bad matchup. Actually, I think the Sixers is a horrible matchup as well. And it's not possible for them to play Milwaukee. If they play Milwaukee, I think Milwaukee would be a bad matchup. I think the Raptors and the Celtics, because of the way the Celtics are conformed right now, are teams that if I'm the Wizards, I'm not scared of. Personally, I'm not scared of.
I mean, you don't have to be scared. I would think no athlete, once you step on the floor, is scared.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a possibility, yeah. But I would think there's a high probability that most athletes aren't scared, but of the team, but of the moment,
mm-hmm.
possibly. But I just don't. I think this is a different Toronto team that we've seen years past.
All right. So on our Facebook page, the Urban Sports Team Facebook page, about, you know, what would be a bad matchup for the Washington Wizards. A lot of people said all matches be bad for the Wizards the way they're playing.
I wouldn't disagree with you. Look, this team takes too many possessions off.
Mm-hmm.
John Wall still, I mean, it's maddening to me when he tries to make those jump passes.
Oh, that's terrible. You talking about the one against Cleveland?
Yeah, that's horrible. That's just one example, but mm-hmm. there are many examples of those types of passes that he makes. Then also, okay, let's say if you are the let's say Casey and Brooks go with an 8-man rotation.
Right? Yeah.
If you're the Wizards, who are you gonna go with? Satoransky.
Oh, off the bench.
Yeah, Satoransky, Oubre, and Mike Scott.
Mike Scott.
That's just not enough offensive firepower.
I mean, you got Jody Meeks if you want to as a shooter.
I mean, yeah,
Jody Meeks scored. Like,
yeah, that's
he's
true.
Off this year though. But that's true.
I don't think you have enough consistency scoring from the bench,
mm-hmm.
and I also don't think you have a high level of consistency and a level of play you're gonna have if you're the Wizards.
But say if I play
Toronto,
say if I play devil's advocate. We're talking about Toronto, right? Most of these guys, this will be their first postseason, right? Off the top, about the second, you know, not the start.
Yeah.
So again, that plays a part too. No, it's a different beast.
It is, but you know what they have, one advantage they have, they've mm-hmm. never been in the moment, so they aren't scared, so they don't know how to act. They don't know how to react.
No.
It can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a certain how do I want to say this? When you don't know any better, there's a certain freedom to that.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Ignorance is bliss. I agree. No, ignorance. That's how I kind of have that same thought process about the Sixers. That's why I think that would be a bad matchup. One, because I think their big is too versatile. And you see the Wizards, they struggle against versatile bigs. And that's what Embiid brings to the table. And Ben Simmons is a man-child. I think that if the Wizards did match up against the Sixers, that would be a bad one.
Ben Simmons in his second year is a man-child.
It's his second year. But he is a rookie and all.
He's not a rookie.
You know what's funny about that? Cause before we go to – I mean, I don't want to go off topic for so long. But if Ben Simmons – this is my thing. He didn't play a single regular season game, right?
True.
Okay, last year, right? So Ben Simmons, we're in like college basketball. Think about it.
He Was he in a Sixers facility?
That's true.
Facility?
Yeah, he was.
Was he in meetings?
But That's true.
Did he have access to the playbook?
That's fair.
Did he have access to coaching? Did he have access to strength and conditioning? Did he have the ability to sit and take mental reps during practice?
No, not at all. Like, I agree. Did anybody say that about Blake Griffin, though? No one said anything about Blake Griffin when that happened, Blake.
I did.
No, I'm just talking about them. Because now I ain't say you, but that's the argument now for a lot of people. They weren't saying that with Blake.
No, I get it. I get your counter argument, mm-hmm. but no, when Blake Griffin, I always maintain that mm-hmm. Blake Griffin wasn't a rookie.
No, I'm not.
Therefore, he shouldn't. I understand the premise, you know, you didn't suit up one game your rookie year, didn't play 1 minute, so you're technically, this is your first year mm-hmm. in the league, but no, your first year. It's your second year in the league. It's your first year playing.
Who said, my man, Dante Jones said their best bet is beating Boston. That's the Wizards' best bet.
I mean, yeah, I'm. You know, if no Kyrie, no Marcus Smart, no Gordon Hayward, but they still have a pretty damn good coach.
Oh man, that's what I'm saying. That's the best coach. Well, between him and Pop, that's arguably. I'm always in the middle with that one. Pop, who's the best coach right now? Pop or Brad Stevens? I'm on the side now to say Brad Stevens at this point in time. Because he lost so many players this year, and he still has this team as the second seed.
Yeah, that's fair. But I go with consistency.
No, I get you.
Pop.
I get you. No, I love Pop. Pop to me is the best coach in our era, in my opinion. It's about. I mean, in terms of his consistency, and he doesn't have the best talent every year. But he knows how to consistently. He has his team out there as the best team, best seed overall, or the best team in the NBA, or whatever. He's always in contention to win a championship. That's what I love about Pop. Also on our Facebook page, in terms of a bad matchup for the Wizards, Aaron J says the Cavs. He says, I feel pretty good about playing any other team in the East. They may not beat them, but I feel they can beat any team in the East except for the Cavs.
I think Milwaukee would give the Wizards.
But it's impossible to play them though.
Yeah,
the first
I know
round.
It's impossible. I'm just stating mm-hmm. teams. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee. I would like the Sixers over this team.
I do too.
I would. Nah, they can beat Miami. Indiana would be a very
That would be seven.
That would be seven. I think Toronto wins this in six games.
I think this that series will be really tight. Just because I just feel like John Wall is the X factor. It's funny to say that, but John Wall would be the X factor. If you get the John Wall that we saw last year against the Boston Celtics before game seven, I think he can take you.
That's a big if.
I mean, he's got the ability. He's got all the ability in the world. But he needs to. I also believe that he needs to show something similar within the next couple games before the season ends. Because you got to have confidence going into the playoffs if you're John Wall.
I mean, you have Boston tonight, mm-hmm. and then what tomorrow you have.
It's a cupcake game, I think.
A cupcake. They lost Friday to the Hawks.
To Hawks, you're right. That's
without
true.
Dennis Schroeder.
You're right.
Schroeder, excuse me.
And John Wall didn't play in that game too. It just seems like NASA John Wall's back.
And they lost against the Bulls.
And without John Wall.
Yep.
Isn't it funny now that John Wall's back in the games he's not playing? It seems like now, you know, they can lose to anybody. And the whole argument was at first, like, all right, we're a better team without John Wall. Do you think they're relying too much on John Wall since he's been back? And now when he's out of the game, when he's not playing, now it's like, okay, we don't have John Wall. What we're going to do?
It's against the Magic tomorrow.
The Magic. That's
in Orlando.
In Orlando, yeah. I feel like.
I'm not going to say they're too reliant on John Wall. I will say this. There's a different style of basketball being played when John Wall is on the floor. Mm-hmm. I think anyone. And don't get me wrong, I was never one of those people who said, oh, this team's better without John Wall. They aren't. Mm-hmm. But there's a different style of basketball being played with John Wall. There's more people sitting around waiting. There's not enough ball rotation. There's not enough movement.
No, I totally agree. You're listening to Urban Sports Scene. Feel free to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene or hit us up on our Facebook. Facebook page. If you have any thoughts about what matchup is the worst matchup for the Wizards in the first round. From what you've seen of John Wall, do you think he's ready to carry this team in the postseason?
Not yet. I still think, you know, even though he's come back and he looks in physically in better shape, I question how, you know, there aren't going to be any back-to-backs in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, you have those extended breaks. How's his body going to react? How's his body going to feel with all that rest? Mm-hmm. You have some players when they're coming off of an injury, yeah, they don't need as much rest because they would prefer to get out there and continue to play to get their conditioning and get their body physically reacclimated.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to know what the playoff schedule will look like.
Oh yeah, but you know they give you that rest though.
Like, yeah, they give plenty of rest. Will that rest be? Will it be a deterrent for him? You know, because he's working his way back in physical shape.
I get your point. The rhythm, trying to get his rhythm back. To me, it's important for him within these next couple games, because to your point, Will, I totally agree with you that he's going to need to kind of use these next two games as practice. If that makes any sense. So he's going to have to anticipate people going under the screen row, right? So he's going to have to pretty much focus on knocking down that jump shot. Either he's going to have to kind of focus on following through 24/7. There's things he's going to have to do within these couple games.
And then you have to take into consideration, I don't know, Scott Brooks and the coaching staff and the organization hasn't made a decision yet. John Wall hasn't played back-to-backs. Will he play tomorrow night? And tomorrow night could be a game where seven for eighth is still up for grabs.
Well, also, it depends on what you value. Like, which slot do you value? Do you want – I mean, obviously, you can only imagine they want to be the seventh spot because they probably want to play – they definitely probably want to play the Boston Celtics. So it's probably a must-win for them mentally, right, rather than playing Toronto. Regardless of what I've said about Toronto, they probably ideally want to play Boston. You
know, like Scott Brooks said, these next two games are – a early playoff, introduction to the playoffs, start of your playoffs, where every possession counts. So,
no, agreed. Anyway, the Washington Capitals are again Metropolitan Division champs. After the break, we'll have Ed Frankovic from WNXT to talk about the Capitals' first round playoffs. You're listening to Urban Sports Saying.
Break time for me.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces. Listening to the Urban Sports and myself, Wally, Will T. Ray is out. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you rate us. Leave us a comment. We appreciate all comments. You know, rating us. Make sure we're high in the game in terms of sports talk. Right now, we have. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you great now.
Excellent. All right. How are you guys?
We're fine. We're good. Sorry about that, Ed.
Thanks.
Hey, no problem. It's that time of year, huh?
Yeah, you know it's about that time. It's Capitals hockey. This is very important right now. The city needs this. They need the Capitals to do better than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, you know, the Redskins had another bad year, not a good year for the Wizards, and I don't think the Nats are off the greatest start, so the Capitals got to step up for this area, because the Orioles are going to be lousy, too. On the
Don't hurt my feelings about the Orioles. The Orioles, they went to New York and did some damage. No one thought they could do it.
Yeah, that was nice winning 3 or 4 up there. Mm-hmm. Nestor and I talked about that on WNST, and we were happy about that. But I think it's going to be a tough year just with the pitching and stuff. If they had the Nationals starting pitching, then we might have something there.
Yeah, but the hitting, I know we're going off base, but the hitting is an issue, especially in terms of patience with runners in scoring position. It's feel like they're just not patient enough. They don't understand that when you have runners in scoring position, you're in charge of the moment, not the pitcher.
I agree with you totally. They do chase a lot of pitches, and that's been one of their problems the last few years.
Well, let's talk about the Caps. Something positive. The Caps again are division champs. A lot of people before the season started said this team wouldn't even make the postseason. How do they do it? How are they Metropolitan champs?
Well, I think it started in goal. Holpe had a really good start to the season, and then Grubauer took it over the last couple months. And I heard you guys talking, and Grubauer is going to be the goalie for Game mm-hmm. 1, and he earned it. But when they build up the middle of the ice, he knew he had dearly for Evgeny Kuznetsov, $7.8 million a year. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
He's making over $1 million more than Nicklas Backstrom. But I tell you what, Kuznetsov really brought his game up as the season's gone on, and he's been dominant. And I think up the middle of the ice with Nicklas Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Lars Eller, and Jay Beagle, who's been hurt lately. But those four guys played really well up front. They got a monster year from John Carlson, who was in the last year of his contract. He's going to get big money this summer. And, you know, the coaching staff really got some guys to really amp their game up. Dmitry Orlov, it's amazing how far he's come in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
He got big money last summer. He has probably been the most consistent player since Halloween for this hockey team. Dmitry Orlov has had a great season, both ends of the rink, really playing well. And Tom Wilson has become a top six forward. They've talked about this since he was drafted, that he had the potential to be that. He had a terrible first year under Adam Oates. Probably should have sent him back to the minors. But Barry Trotz has brought Wilson, and I got to give Wayne Lambert, the assistant coach who runs the forward, a lot of credit. But I got to give Tom Wilson the most credit. That guy works hard, and he has become a very, very big piece for this hockey team. And this first series against Columbus, Tom Wilson's going to be a huge factor. He has to be a huge factor because he's a big body. The games get physical, as you guys well know, and they're going to need Wilson. So they got 8 guys that had career years. So despite the fact of losing Justin Williams, Carl Osner, Nate Schmidt, they lost, Kevin Shattenkirk, Marcus Johansson, they were still able to win the division because they had depth up the middle, they had great goaltending, and other guys stepped up and had career years.
All right, you're listening to the Urban Sports Team with WNST Caps insider Ed Frankovic. So, Ed, how does this team compare to past Capitals playoff teams?
Well, that's a good question, and I guess we will see how they perform. I think the one thing that I do like about where this team is right now reminds me more of the team going into the playoffs in 2012 from a goaltending perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Brayden Holpe was very hot going into the playoffs in 2012, and he carried that team through the first two rounds. I think this year with Grubauer's emergence, they probably have the best goaltending they've had maybe since Ole Kolzig days.
Ooh,
going
wow.
into the playoffs.
Okay.
The way Grubauer's playing, and if he happens to falter, Brayden Holpe had a number of good games down the stretch. He is rested this year. In past years, he's carried the majority of the load, and he's gone into the playoffs, and he's gotten nicked up. He's gotten minor injuries. And this year, he had his injuries in February and March, and he had time to rest. So, and Grubauer was rested for most of the year, and he would get the spot starts, but he really seized the net. He had an opportunity, and he took it. So I think this team is in better shape because of goaltending. And I remember talking to you guys last year, and you guys made a point, and it was a very good point, that Brayden Holpe has to be the man if this team's going to go to the finals. And I love Brayden as much as anybody, but he wasn't last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Marc-Andre Fleury was the man for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
And that's why the Penguins moved on, and then Matt Murray came in. So I think from a goaltending standpoint, they're different this year. Here's the other big factor that I like. Alex Ovechkin is in the best shape he's been in probably 5 years.
Wow.
Last year, he was not in good shape. Mm-hmm. He had gotten married the summer before, put on a couple marital pounds, if you will, that first year. We've all done it, right?
Marriage weight. But Ovi relationship got, weight. Relationship weight. Yeah, that's very true.
I took one look at him when he got off the plane in September. I said he's going to score 50. Now, he didn't score 50. He scored 49.
Close.
But, hey, he came doggone close. I don't know if you guys watched that game last Saturday, but it was really exciting.
It was special.
He had a breakaway to get 50, shot it over the net, and had a couple chances late. But Obi's in great shape. I don't think you're going to see him have an injury like he did last year. If he's in the shape he's in this year, last year, the Caps probably win because he doesn't get hit by Nazem Kadri down there in the corner. He's fast enough and decent enough shape that he gets around that hit.
Mm.
And that hit led to then the blown-out hamstring in Game 3 against Pittsburgh. So Alex Ovechkin is a better player this year. The goaltending's better. And I like the way Kuznetsov playing. I think he's got enough experience now. I think he's a more mature player. I think he understands the pass-first-shoot mentality much better. He scored 27 goals this year. So those are the things I like. Now, the thing that's on the downside, they don't have the strong defense like they had last year. And you could say, well, that defense was strong, but they didn't play well in the playoffs. And they didn't. They had their bad stretches. But, you know, they didn't get what they wanted at the trade deadline. They were hoping to bring in top 4D. They just didn't have the money to do it. They brought in Michael Kempney from Chicago and Jacob Jerebic from Montreal, kind of on the cheap. But Todd Reardon and Barry Trotz have done a great job with these guys. And these guys, if you look at how the Capitals played down the stretch, these guys were parts of it, big parts of it. And they've helped stabilize a blue line that for 50 games they had Christian Hughes and Madison Bowie. And Madison Bowie is going to be a heck of a player. I really like him a lot. He's going to be a top four defenseman in a couple of years. But he's a rookie, and it's hard in the NHL to be, or any sport, a rookie, it's hard. So the Capitals upgraded their D. That's probably their weakness. And that's where they're a little weaker than past years.
So before I let you go, on the Blue Jackets, for folks who don't follow hockey as much, on the Blue Jackets, who should Cap fans worry about the most in this series? The goaltender?
Well, that's a great. There's four guys I'm going to throw at you. Okay, I'm going to start in net with Sergei Bobrovsky.
Okay, so I thought
he's a very good goalie. He's very streaky. If he gets hot, look out, because he can get on a hot streak. That's why it's so important that the Capitals get traffic and shots and bodies on them, and they don't try to overpass and settle for the perimeter stuff, because if Bobrovsky's seeing the shots and they're not making it hard on them, it's going to be a long series the Capitals could easily lose. The next two guys I really like on Columbus, I like Seth Jones, and you guys, his father played in the NBA, and Zach Werenski. These two defensemen. I love Seth Jones when he came out. He came out, I think it was the 2013 draft. I really thought he could have gone number one. Nathan MacKinnon ended up going number one with Colorado. He's had great success. The Predators drafted Jones. They had a wealth of defensemen. They traded him to Columbus to get Ryan Johansson. Seth Jones has really blossomed in Columbus. He's a fantastic player. He can skate both ways. He won the World Juniors with the USA. He's a great defenseman. He's somebody you got to watch. You got to know where he is on the ice at all times. And his defensive partner, Zach Werenski, is a young defenseman as well. Another guy that can skate, can shoot. Those two guys on the back end are really good defensemen. And then up front, the guy you really have to look out for is Artemi Panarin. He's a Russian. Orlov, Kuznetsov, Ovechkin are going to be very familiar with this guy. He came over from Chicago in a trade last summer. This guy is dynamic. He can shoot. He can pass. He can skate. He leads their offense. So those are the four guys that you really got to watch out there. And then Columbus has guys like Nick Foligno and Brandon Dubinsky that fill in and play a heavy game. And then they had a really smart acquisition at the trade deadline. They brought in Thomas Vanek, who's a notorious Cap killer. That guy's a sniper. He can score some goals. So the Capitals are really going to have their hands full, guys. This is going to be a coin flip series. It's going to be very difficult.
All right, before I let you go, give me a prediction. What's the series?
Wow. You know, you really put me on the spot. I've been staying away from predictions, but I like you guys. So I'm going to go ahead. I normally wouldn't go out on a ledge. You know, I really am nervous about this series, but I'm going to go with the Caps in seven. Just because of the home ice.
Uh-huh.
I think they're going to really have a hard time. I hope I'm wrong. But John Tortorella, you know, he knows how to play the Capitals. These guys, Columbus, are going to pack it in and block shots. So I think the Capitals are going to come out on top. I think it's going to be a really hard series. And if they don't play the right way, They're going to find themselves on the golf course in a couple of weeks, guys.
Ooh. Well, Ed, thanks for calling in. Hopefully, we'll have you. I want to get you on as this, you know, as the playoffs go on. Hopefully, the Caps make it far so we can be on for like week by week. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it.
Hey, all the best, and gentlemen, have a good night, and we'll hopefully be talking about a win here soon.
Hopefully. Thanks, Ed.
Hey, anytime, guys.
All right.
Take care, man.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Again, that's Ed Frankovic from WNXT. He is the Caps insider. Great guy. But about time for a break. When we get back from break, Josh Norman said that Alex Smith is better than Kirk Cousins within certain aspects, though. You're listening to the Urban Sports Saying.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Team. Myself, Wally, Will T. Ray is out. In case you missed it, cornerback Josh Norman had this to say about Alex Smith and Kirk Cousins on Fox's show Undisputed.
Say it. I think he's considerably better than Kirk Cousins. Well, that's just me.
Personally, that two different, you know, two different people can say that. But at the same time, you know, Kirk is in Minnesota, and we have Alex Smith with the Washington Redskins. I'm glad we do got him. And right now, the way Alex Smith is playing, his mindset and the way he's developed is better than Kirk Cousins right now, because he's in a level right now in the league and his profession. Mm-hmm. He's been here. He's done it. He's seen those multiple playoff games and been in those situations and plays to where he sees the game differently mm-hmm. than Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins and the way he throws the ball and his accuracy is like, I mean, gosh, he got what he got for a reason. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you look at those two guys and you put them in that same room, you're going to be like, okay, Alex Smith, Kirk Cousins, who's experienced here?
Oh, that was a little beat thing going. But anyway, yeah, you heard what Josh Norman had to say. What were your thoughts about that, about his statements, Will?
There's a interesting pattern that occurs whenever a player leaves town.
Yeah.
In any town, any sport.
In any sport. Yeah, yeah.
It's always that the new guy is better than the last guy was here, or yeah. people try to find a way to say, well, this new guy is better in this area than the previous guy. Why can't we just come to a consensus and say, look, you know, Alex, you know, Kirk Cousins, why do we always have to kind of
compare the two?
Not compare the two, but kind of backhandedly trash the other guy.
But it wasn't.
But
no, if you listen to the whole interview, he pretty much didn't want to say anything negative, right? He said like Kirk Cousins is good. He said that how accurate Kirk Cousins is, where he can put the ball, his ball placement was unbelievable. What he was saying, you know, because Josh Norman is country, so he goes all the way around to get what he wants to say. But what he was saying is that because of experience, because he's been there, he's won big playoff games. He has that
Alex
element.
Smith has Alex won Smith, big playoff game.
Well, San Francisco, he won a big playoff game against. He beat the Saints in that big game. Took him to the NFC Championship game.
He won one big playoff.
That's
game.
A big playoff game. It's a big game. He's been the moment. He's played well in a big playoff game. He's played well.
No, I'm not debating that.
I didn't say win. I said he's played well.
I mean, but to come on here for anyone to say Alex Smith has made big plays throughout his career, or he's had a big playoff, I think that's kind of disingenuous. I don't know his career record off the top of my head.
In the postseason?
Yes.
Oh, he's won maybe that. No, he beat the. They beat. No, they lost the Colts that year. They beat the Colts that year in the postseason.
That's the year when Andrew Luck and those guys came back.
So he only won one playoff game in my.
If my memory serves me correct, Alex Smith has won.
What
one
I'm saying is he's
game.
Played well in big games. He's played well. Those are big games. He's played well. He played how many yards he put against the Colts? Like almost like 400 or 500 yards against the Colts?
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. Well. He wasn't the reason why they lost.
So my point is that compared to what Josh Norman is saying, compared to Kirk Cousins, who he's been in the postseason. Let's be real, like as a start once, right? Let's be fair to Kirk Cousins. He's been in the postseason once against the Green Bay Packers, right? Alex Smith has played well. He's played well in those games. He's been experienced. Even in the regular season game, in games you need, he's played well in games you need in the post in the regular season. So I think what Josh Norman is saying, you can you know that from Alex. Like Alex in the regular season, in those games, he's played well. You can even say it in the game he played against the Redskins on Monday night when he made that drive to win the game. Those are things I think that Josh Norman is referring to.
Okay, I think that's a little bit a little bit more fair.
Yeah.
No, I just you know there's a theme throughout sports. No matter what town you're in, it's always we have to find some little dig to take at the guy who left opposed to the guy who's coming in. The guy who's coming in is the greatest thing since sliced bread, even though we haven't seen him perform in this system in this town.
No, I agree. You think he stayed in the company line?
Absolutely, he's towing the company line. Look. This is off season in Washington. When it comes to this football team, everyone's optimistic. People even get even more optimistic around training camp.
All the time.
Happens yearly. You know, I've been a native of the DMV my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the level of optimism from the players, those the people in the organization, and the fans when it comes to this team in the off season. I will say this. As you know, we had this discussion before. Who do we think is better?
I think Alex Smith is better. I've always been an Alex Smith fan.
No, I think Alex Smith puts you in a better position to make more big plays with his legs.
Yeah, this is
than Kirk Cousins.
This is my thing. I know Alex Smith won't lose you a game.
But will he win you a game?
Kirk Cousins couldn't win you a game.
Alex Smith ever won you a game?
But we're comparing these two quarterbacks, right? This is the comparison, right?
Yes, but
Alex Smith has won a game. He's beat against the Redskins. If you want to look at that game Monday, he's beat the Redskins. Like he literally beat the Redskins himself with, like you said, using his legs, using his arms, being a playmaker. Like Alex Smith will do, the difference between Alex Smith and Kirk Cousins is that Alex Smith will do whatever it takes to win a game. That's either throwing the ball or running the ball. If he sees that lane, he's going to run the ball. Kirk Cousins is about the process. You hear it all the time. He's about the process. So between the two, if I'm comparing the two, like I'm not saying Alex Smith is Aaron Rodgers. That is not it. Kirk Cousins is not Aaron Rodgers. You get what I'm saying?
Okay.
Kirk Cousins is not Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to win you a game. But like those turnovers we see before the half, like those pick sixes, right? Those plays aren't made by Alex Smith. Those plays
because he had a reputation of being a check down Charlie, which is fair.
But I'm saying that if you compare the two, who's likely to lose you the game between those two?
Oh, Kirk.
Yeah. So in terms of the Washington Redskins, the Redskins team needs everything to go right. You need a guy that can't put you in those situations.
I think that's fair.
So, I mean, that's just between those two. But anyway, let's talk about the Nationals. We'll talk about the Nationals after the break. The Nationals, are they still the NL East beasts? We'll discuss that after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Zone.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Myself, Wally, Will T. Ray is out. Over the weekend, let me go first. The Washington Nationals right now beating the Atlanta Braves 3-0. In there in the sixth, the top of the sixth, with Steven Strasburg pitching. Over the weekend, the Nationals were swept at home by the Mets. You know, the Nats will walk through the NL East. Are the Nats, in your opinion, still the best team in the NL East? I know it's early, though, but still.
I think the fact that we're having this conversation is laughable.
All right, go ahead. Explain why.
No, look, this is only 10 games into a 162-game season.
Agreed.
The Nats don't even have their best hitter in the lineup. Well, who is Daniel Murphy?
Well, Bryce Harper's their best hitter. is their best hitter by far.
Look at average.
Daniel Mears is their best average hitter, but Bryce Harper is their best. Is their best all around hitter. Power. Power average.
All I can go off is statistics.
Who's the best?
Daniel Murphy
is the best average hitter.
Daniel Murphy's been the best hitter he's the best hitter on the team.
He's the best average hitter. Bryce Harper is the guy who do you pitch around? Who do you pitch around?
Answer this question. Yeah. Answer my question first.
Yeah.
What is Bryce Harper's average over the past 2 years versus last year?
Okay, then let's do this argument.
No, answer the question.
Last 2 years, I don't have the stats, so I can't like.
I'll tell you.
Tell me the stats.
322. And I believe
Bryce Harper's average.
No,
Daniel Murphy's. Okay.
It's 322 and 330, if I'm not mistaken, okay. Daniel Murphy.
How many runs do you drive in? Because you told me the best hitter. It's like that's only average. Like, that's my argument. My argument is not, it's October.
He brought in 100. He had 100
over,
RBIs.
More RBIs than Bryce?
Yes.
Bryce Harper
has never had 100 RBIs in his career.
More
so
RBIs?
To this day,
okay.
Daniel Murphy is the best hitter. On the
team. How many years has Daniel Murphy been in the league?
How many years has he been on the Nets?
No, in the
twice.
League.
No. The fair
you
question.
You said who's the better hitter? You said Daniel. No, you're not saying
the best hitter on this team.
No. Your argument is who is the best hitter
on this team?
Who is the best?
I said who's
hitter.
The best hitter on this team?
And
if we look at average,
okay.
It's Daniel Murphy over the past 2 years. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm going to move on.
Okay.
So that's two.
Uh huh.
Three. I think the whole conversation is laughable to me.
Uh-huh.
It's a conversation I really don't feel like having, but you put it on there, so we'll talk about it.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I still be, because it's only 10 games in, and the team who you thought was the best team in baseball, who had a historical run last year, had the same record after 10 games as the Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's really fair to I don't see the necessity to have this conversation,
mm-hmm.
because you really can't tell, because we don't know how the season's going to play out only after 10 games. After 25, mm-hmm. maybe 30 games, it's a fair conversation to have, but after 10 games where baseball is a grind, it's not. I don't think it's really it's a non-necessity to really have this conversation after 10 games. But will they run? Are they still the beast of the East? I still think that the Nationals have the best. If you look at the best, their team, the mm-hmm. best talent overall. Yes, I still think that the Nets will win the NL East even after 10. After not starting as hot as many people projected them to be after 10.
So
games.
even with.
Yes, the Mets are 8.
No, I'm not talking about the Mets. I'm not talking about the Mets. So with the Nationals, any concern with being swept by the Mets? Like, if you're a team, would you be any concern with that?
Once again, it's the first series. It's the first series these two have had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll have another series this week coming up. If I'm not mistaken, in DC.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be New York.
Can't be New DC.
In New York. No, I still don't think there's any concern if you're the Nationals. Are there things that need to be worked out? Absolutely, there are things that need to be worked out. But it's too early to call. It's only 10 games into the season. You still have, 100, and including this game, not including this game, you still have 151 more games.
So, you listen to the Urban Sports thing. So between. Because obviously, to me, like, their biggest competition would probably be the Mets. The Braves are still young and still in terms of offense, they still have things that they're not really strong in. Nick Markakis, they still have Freddie Freeman, who's awesome out of this world. When you look at the Mets, what they bring to the table, it's all baseball, it's all predicated on pitching. Anytime I talk about a good team, it's about pitching. And when you look at the Nats, they obviously Stras, Scherzer, Gio. Even to me, Roark pitched okay, even though he took that loss. He was sharp enough. Obviously, down the road in that game, certain things kind of left him, but he was strong in terms of his two-seam fastball. But when you look at what the Mets bring to the table, are they a threat to the Nats because of their pitching staff?
Absolutely, they're a threat. And like I said, I'm a novice fan. I don't continue. You'll never hear me say I'm a baseball expert. Mm-hmm. I'm a novice fan. I enjoy just watching the game. I can't talk strategy with you or anything like mm-hmm. that. I'm not that in depth. My baseball knowledge isn't that in depth.
You're smart enough. You're smart enough. Go ahead.
But if they're healthy, the Mets do have a pitching staff that is on par with mm-hmm. the Nationals rotations, mm-hmm. 1-5. They also have they have hitters,
mm-hmm.
Cespedes,
Bruce,
Conforto.
Conforto. You have, I'm forgetting somebody else too. You have Frazier, who's been a 30-40.
Yeah, Todd Frazier, who came over from the Yankees mm-hmm. last year. So, yeah, they have some talent. They have pieces.
And Adrian Gonzalez, too. Gonzalez.
Yeah, Adrian Gonzalez. I forgot his career is kind of declined.
He's played well, though. He's playing well with them. They got the cheap, though. You're right, though.
Yeah, but this is a team with pieces. The Nationals, they haven't had all their pieces really fully engaged thus far. They haven't had a major piece in that lineup, Daniel Murphy,
mm-hmm.
a guy who – I'm pretty sure you're not going to bat behind Bryce Harper. You'll probably bat him behind Zimmerman when he comes back.
It's going to be interesting.
You'll probably want to go left, right, left, and that's Bryce, Zimmerman, Murphy. So, to me, it'll be interesting to see how things will play out. But after 10 games, I'm not really willing. Yeah, I'm not concerned. 5-5. It looks like the Nationals.
They'll be 6-5.
They can go 6-5, and then I believe they have Game 4 against the Braves tomorrow. I mm-hmm. could be mistaken. I don't know.
It's Game 3 tomorrow, isn't it? It's Game 3, right? It'll be Game 3.
Oh yeah, excuse me. Game 3. Mm-hmm. Game 3 tomorrow against the Braves. So you know, there's still so much of this season that has to play out. And remember that. You know, a team that was on a historic pace last year, the Dodgers, they weren't really the Dodgers until June, until they ran off, 14 to 16 straight.
Mm-hmm.
So, no one's run away with the division yet. Still very early. No worries, no panic from this fan anyway.
All right, on Twitter, I'm trying to figure what question this is. On Twitter, my man AJ, in terms of the question about comparing the Nats and the Nats and the Mets. AJ, has the Mets been to World Series recently? The Nats just better figure out how they're trading Bryce Harper.
I mean, that's a strong statement, but I mean, the Bryce Harper question is going to be the question that lingers over everyone. You're going to. He's already. I think he did the best thing for this team where he said. Any questions about my free agency, my impending free agency, I will get up and I will walk out of a press conference, which is the right thing to do. Focus on this season.
Yeah. I mean,
I will say this when it comes to potential pay, the richest or the owners with the most money mm-hmm. are the learners.
Oh, yeah, they got money.
The learners are. From a net worth perspective, the learners are they have the most the highest net worth out of all the baseball owners. So if they decide to pony up, they probably can get into a very steep bidding war. It's all dependent on where Bryce Harper feels comfortable, where he wants to be.
I don't think it's never been an issue about if they had the money to pay Bryce. Except if they want to do it, it's totally up to them.
But I do think they made a step in the right direction, which was last week by signing Mike Rizzo.
Agreed. Yeah, that was a must. Yeah, you talk about one of the better GMs in baseball.
Yeah, if you had to let the Mike Rizzo thing linger on and further into the season, I think it would only have been toxic for this
team. If you let him go, you didn't care about winning. He was just he's that important. He's that important to the process and to what they built here in D.C. A guy who used to run D.C. back in the day, Robert Griffin, is back in the NFL. He'll be playing in Baltimore. Playing for the Ravens. We'll discuss this after the break. You listen to Urban Sports Saying.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces. Conviction. Boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness, yeah. Soldiers, DNA. Born inside the beast. My expertise checked out in second grade. When I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay. At
witness what the fuck you heard. And pessimism struck my nerve. And as a riff on a pleader's case, the reason my power's here. Salute the truth from the prophet, see. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. I got loyalty inside my DNA. This is my heritage, all I'm inheriting. Money and power, the maker emeritus. Tell me something.
You are listening to Urban Sports Scene, myself, Wally, Will T. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you rate us and leave us a comment. Also, check out the Football Garbage Time podcast at www.footballgarbagetime.com. All right. Robert Griffin III. I like calling him RG3. Robert Griffin III signed a one-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens to likely be their backup. Thoughts of the signing? Again, he's the backup. I want people to know that he's the backup.
He's the backup. Once again, I don't know why people is. I don't know what it is about him. It's just that it gets people.
Nostalgic. He's nostalgic.
He's a lightning rod for controversy.
He's polarizing.
Yes, he's very polarizing. Some people are upset that he – I don't know. There are some fans of this of the Washington football team that are upset that he's still even in the area.
They are. People are still
and upset. I don't understand it. Why? Look, you made a decision. Kurt was your guy.
Yeah, totally.
Kurt decided to move on to Minnesota. You decided to part ways with Robert. What's the problem?
He's gone. This is my thing. When I heard about it the first time, and, you know, I'm going to contradict myself. When I heard it the first time and everybody was talking about it, I was like, who cares? He signed with the Ravens. Who cares? He's a backup.
I mean, we don't even know if he'll be the backup.
Well, Ryan Mallett's not on the roster.
Well, we don't know. Maybe they draft someone.
That's true. I'm saying he should be the backup. He should be. But again, he's the backup. You know what I mean? That's what I mean. He's the backup.
Yeah, he's the backup. Look, I would even say that with Alex Smith, you probably have a better. There's more justification to bring him back here with Alex Smith
because of the similar
skill set. Now, I don't know what offensively what you want to do, mm-hmm. and I don't know the relationship between Jay Gruden and Robert Griffin III. But I will say if you're going to sign Alex Smith and if you're going to do some of the things that you did with Kirk Cousins from a read option perspective, I would say that. Maybe this place would have been a better fit.
Jay Gruden ain't about that life. I think he was over. He was over the whole Robert Griffin III experiment. But yeah, I'm with you in this aspect that I don't get the whole hoopla about it. He's a backup for the Ravens. And then you hear fans talking about, well, Flacco was so bad last year. He's been so bad the last couple of years. This is Robert's chance to be the starting quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens. The only way that one, this is what Redskins fans, I'm be honest with you. And I'm a diehard Skins fan. I want y'all to understand this, too, that you're going to see Robert Griffin III in four games. And all four games will be in the preseason. And you'll see a lot of them the last preseason game. So that's the most you're going to see out of Robert Griffin III. And the only time you will see Robert Griffin III in the regular season is, one, if the Baltimore Ravens are blowing the team out. And secondly, if Joe Flacco is injured. And Joe Flacco, if you look at his resume, his track record of the last couple, other than probably last year, he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. Once again, it's look. It'll be interesting if these two teams play in the preseason.
They will. They always do.
Then you'll hear. Then the sports media around here will definitely be on 10, speaking about Robert Griffin, his time here, and if he plays good, you'll definitely get some fans who were pro RG. I don't even want to call him that.
Robert Griffin III. That's
pro called. Robert Griffin III.
That's his name.
Saying, "Oh, we shouldn't have let him go. We should have brought him back." And so you'll get those type of narratives when it comes that time. When it comes to preseason, that time of the season. But for now, just chill, relax, just concentrate on your team. I know a lot of people are really into the draft, prognosticating the draft, mm-hmm. which I'm totally not into. I really don't get it. Mm-hmm. Like, even the NFL evaluators, they don't know what the hell they're doing.
I mean, nobody does.
Bill Barnwell had a very interesting piece on ESPN about drafting quarterbacks.
They all get it wrong.
And the probability, of getting it right, which is more likely you're going to get it wrong than you are going to get it right.
Yeah,
drafting a quarterback, especially early in the first round.
Yeah, it's because their metrics are terrible, to be honest with you. And people don't go off of tape. They go off of potential more than what you see on tape. So both quarterbacks are gone. Robert Griffin III. Both guys were drafted in 2012. Robert Griffin III, Kirk Cousins, also gone. Who had the best individual season? Griffin in 2012, Kirk Cousins 2015. Both playoff years. One went 10-6. One went 9-7. And I guess let me put it this way: who gave you more hope?
You're asking
after 2012, like not you, but if you had to think about it, who would give one a team more hope?
I think. You'll recall, yeah. I called him Willie Beeman.
Yeah, exactly.
I said he was Willie Beeman, and I told you what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was doing the one drift route over the middle, check down, or run. Those were his three options all the time. You clearly saw that he wasn't making his progressions and making his reads.
Yeah.
I would go with Kirk Cousins, just off the fact that Kirk Cousins resembled and looked like the closest thing that this franchise had to a franchise quarterback in over 20 years.
All right, on face.
Outside of that, once
I'm saying 2012. That's what I'm using. 2012 and 20.
Yeah, no, 2012. I will go with Kirk Cousins.
Okay, so on our Facebook page, James Johnson said 2012 by a landslide, but it was based off of gimmick and wouldn't have been something to look forward to in the future. Something similar to what you just said, Wiltie. George, what's up, George? Said without injury versus Seattle, it would be RG3 without a doubt. None of us were sure what would happen after that. With Cousins, there was guarded hopefulness.
Look, Robert Griffin III's ability to make plays with his legs and just the sheer excitement, you know, that athletic ability was something that people in D.C. hadn't seen at the quarterback position or at a skill position, period, in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last player you could truly say that got you that excited about their individual talent as a player was, rest in peace, Sean Taylor.
Agree. Yeah, Sean Taylor definitely gave you that excitement.
You know, and Clinton Portis with that first year.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton Portis and Sean Taylor. But outside of that, Clinton Portis the first year.
Yeah, Clinton Portis was exciting. It was very exciting.
Yeah.
On Twitter, CW Bar, said, I have to say RG3, mainly in hindsight. Of course, I had high hopes for Kirk and the team making a long-term deal after his first season as a starter. But when the team botched that and Kirk's camp ran up the price, there was little hope to be had.
Kirk's team didn't run up the price. If you didn't offer a fair contract to Kirk Cousins.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Look, and this is, I'm going off of secondhand information, but I'm just putting together the details of everything that happened. After that first year, before you franchised him that first time, you had the opportunity to sign him to, and this is what's been reported, to $16 to $17 million a year. Right? But you said no.
Mm-hmm.
You offered him $12, and then he said, no, I'm going to play it out with the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't run up the price. It's just that the market continued to elevate for quarterbacks.
Agreed.
And then a guy who we can debate franchising that quarterback to hit the free – he had the opportunity to hit the free market, so he didn't drive up the price. It's just that Washington never saw and believed in what they had and didn't offer a fair contract at the beginning.
Last comment on Twitter, Chris Brown said – that's a silly debate. Not even worth. This is a Kirk Cousins fan. Not even worth seriously having. It was easily 2012, 2015. It's not even in the same stratosphere.
Wow. These.
And, oh, this
no,
this is
no,
a
no,
fan.
No,
this is
no, no. I get it, but I guess
2012 people, was so they were no, so special.
I mean,
to a lot of people.
2012 was nostalgic to some people. Yeah. They were 3-7, and what, they won 7 games
no,
in a row?
No, they were 3-6.
3-6.
Then went 10-6 that year.
Then went 10-6, so they won 7 games in a row. But people forget, and if you look at his reads and how he was playing
in the
pocket,
mm-hmm.
what I came on here and I told you.
You said, you said it, but
it was
said
primary read,
mm-hmm.
check down, run.
But you, I'll say this, to this point, though. If it was for Lodi Nada, right, that season could have been real special. Because when they played Seattle with a bum knee, he was up 14-0.
That's true.
And that was a Super Bowl caliber team. They didn't go to the bowl that year, I believe. I think they went to the NFC Championship. They lost. That's the year they lost to the Falcons, and the Falcons beat the Falcons lost to San Francisco that year. I saw, if my memory serves me correctly. Is that the same year?
It could be.
I think it's the same. Well, I think 20. That's the year Cap. That's Cap. Isn't that year Cap started?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. So that season was, you know, obvious to me. That season, it's a little different. That season was a little different. So but you look at it, I think if RG3 of that year, 2012, that was a special year if he didn't get hurt. And that brought folks a lot of hope.
It was a special year, yeah. And once I said, once again, the athletic ability was crazy. You hadn't saw that dynamic of a player in Washington since, rest in peace, Sean Taylor.
Agreed.
But once again, if you just look how his ability to do the simplest thing, which was read defenses.
No, he didn't.
Didn't elicit a lot of confidence, in my opinion. But
what? Not your opinion. That's a fact. He couldn't read defenses. We saw that after that 2012 season. So you saw it. It was right there. But anyway, about to just close this show out. It's a pleasure doing the show with you, Will T.
Pleasure doing the show with you. I'm not sure if I'm here next week.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Okay.
But if not, I'll be here, and, you know, we'll do the damn thing again.
You know it, bro. And again, make sure you tune in next week. Good chance we have a man, Bashar Breeland, on. So, God willing, you know, thank
you. And happen. Also, you'll be on here talking draft. It'll be 2 weeks before the draft.
Oh, you know, I'm talking draft. I like to talk to draft before, like, the right that week before, because everybody gives that BS stuff. You want to do 2 weeks before or the week right?
It doesn't. I'm not that big into the draft, but, you know.
I'm only into the draft when it's that the week of, because I feel like all the BS is out of play. There's too much, like, agents calling folks saying, like, we're really interested in this guy, knowing that's a lie. You know what I mean? It's not the truth. They're just making things up. So, like, right now, Josh Allen, I heard the Cleveland Browns really want to take Josh Allen.
I mean, no one knows what's going to happen.
Exactly.
We don't, you know, that's why I said no one, you know, we can't procast.
I can't say it myself.
I'm too tongue-tied and too tired.
It's all good, man. Anyway, you've been listening to Urban Sports Saying.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie. Swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag, pledge allegiance to the swag.